Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Andrew Wakefield as my special expert guest. Dr. Andrew Wakefield, MBBS, is an academic gastroenterologist. He received his medical degree from St. Mary's Hospital Medical School, part of the University of London, in 1981. Dr. Wakefield pursued a career in gastrointestinal surgery with a particular interest in inflammatory bowel disease. Dr. Wakefield qualified as Fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons in 1985 and was awarded a Fellowship of the Royal College of Pathologists in 2001. He has published over 140 original scientific articles, book chapters, and invited scientific commentaries. In the pursuit of possible links between childhood vaccines, intestinal inflammation, and neurological injury in children, Dr. Wakefield lost his job, his career, his fellowship, and his medical license. He is co-founder of the Autism Media Channel, a TV and video production company that seeks to bring awareness and hope to those interested in childhood developmental disorders. Good morning, Dr. Wakefield, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Good morning. It's a great pleasure to be with you.
Thanks very much for making the time. And initially, I just want to make a point here that I really appreciate what you've put into this and the toll that it's taking. I have similar experiences, and I've met other people like yourself that have really gone through the mill. And really, all they've wanted to do was just reveal the truth and make something very, very important known to the general public and to people that might be at risk. So thanks very much for your courage and concern. It means a lot to the right people.
Thank you.
Now, for those not familiar with your career and work in this area, I'm wondering if you could just give us a synopsis of the events that led to the loss of your medical license and the allegations that have been brought against you.
Certainly, yes. Well, to start off, I started as an entirely conventional physician, trained in medicine, qualified in 1981, and my medical training was rooted in the fundamental belief that the patient comes first and foremost, and there's no compromise or ambiguity about that. And the most important thing that you'll hear is the parent's story or the patient's story, the things they tell you about what actually happened to them or what happened to their child. And that is where medicine takes its roots and where medical science finds its starting point. And if we forget that, that's a terrible thing because we'll go badly wrong. And in autism, we have gone badly wrong. So in 1995, I started getting calls from parents saying my child was perfectly normal. They had an MMR vaccine in many cases, and they regressed into autism. I knew nothing about autism being a gastroenterologist. It was extremely rare, one to two in 10,000 children at the time. And I thought they got the wrong number, but their children turned out to have terrible bowel symptoms, diarrhea, pain, failure to thrive, and nothing had been done about it. You know, the response of the medical profession had largely been, well, your child's autistic, they're bound to have these problems. And that didn't make any sense to me. So to cut a very long story short, I put together a team of people, including the world's leading pediatric gastroenterologist, Professor John Walker-Smith, and we investigated these children and learned what parents were right. Their children had a bowel disease. An inflammatory bowel disease, a sort of mild form of what looked like Crohn's. And when we treated that bowel disease, not only did the bowel symptoms get better, but the behavior got better, the cognition got better, the child woke up, started speaking, started interacting. And that was a fascinating observation. And by the time I left the Royal Free in 2001, we'd seen some 174 children with similar responses in all of them. So it was a very real observation and one which has really driven my career from that point forward. And of course, the question was at that time, if the parents are right about the bowel disease, are they right about the vaccine issue? And I have come to the conclusion that at least from my perspective, yes, they are.
Maybe you could tell us about the study that you published. I was on the internet and watching several interviews that you had given to a wide variety of media people who seemed to be very offensive on the attack in most cases towards you, as if they've been persuaded by the enemies that so-called took you down. But a lot of it was sort of targeted at this scientific piece of information that you published in The Lancet in 1998. So what was it that you published, and why did that get so many people so upset?
The Lancet paper was what is called a case series. It was a very humble, very sober paper, which reported on the first 12 children who came through the doors of the Royal Free Hospital with developmental regression into autism or an autistic spectrum disorder and gastrointestinal symptoms. The first 12 children. It didn't have controls. This is a case series. You don't know what you're controlling against. You're describing, in effect, new findings that merit publication in their own right. And this is the way in which human disease syndromes are described, whether it's autism or Asperger's or Crohn's disease or anything, Lou Gehrig's disease, a handful of patients who present with such a unique and novel pattern of signs and symptoms and findings that they merit publication. And it's this kind of paper that doesn't test hypotheses, it generates hypotheses. It allows you to take it forward and ask questions, is this real? Yes or no? Is this different from something we've seen before? Yes or no? And so on. And so it was a very humble paper, but of course it raised the issue of MMR. The parents' reports in 8 of the 12 children that their child had regressed following MMR, which the parents had associated with the vaccine at that time when their child fell ill. Not when they came to see us, but at the time they actually fell ill. And that was very convincing. So it wasn't our job to censor the parent's story. It was our job to tell the parent's story in this paper, and that is what we did, of course. Then the heavens opened, and the heavens opened because, of course, people are wedded to the notion that the MMR vaccine is safe and it's saving lives, and against measles, for example. And the point that I made is that MMR does not protect from measles. Measles vaccine protects from measles. The mumps and rubella components have no influence on measles at all. So I strongly endorse the continued use of single vaccines, but having done an extensive 250-page report on measles vaccine safety, MMR vaccine safety, I was dismayed by the poverty of the science and could no longer recommend the MMR vaccine. And so what happened was, many people, as you know, became highly critical of that paper. And in order to discredit that paper, they had to discredit both elements of it, that is the vaccine association and the bowel disease. Neither could be allowed to stand. And so what has happened since the publication of that paper, well, we've published a lot of papers confirming the bowel disease, as have others around the world, but the public relations machine has operated in an extravagant and highly expensive way to attempt to discredit the findings. And that's very, very sad, because quite apart from the vaccine issue, of course, there are many children going to the wall who have terrible bowel problems which are not being addressed, because to do so would be sort of tacit endorsement of the vaccine association, and that is a terrible shame.
What about the position where this could be viewed as collateral damage, and it's known and measurable, it's predictable, because the pro-immunization party says, look, we know that some people are going to respond negatively. It's like driving vehicles. Certain numbers of people are killed every year, but millions and millions and millions aren't. So how do you respond to that, knowing what you know?
Well, there are two aspects to the answer to this question. The first relates to how many. What is the body count, if you like? If, let's say, vaccines, MMR vaccine does cause autism, they didn't know about it. They didn't expect it. It came out of the blue. Why is it doing it, and how many children are actually affected? Now, what we do know is that when I was a medical student, autism was 1 to 2 in 10,000. Now it's 1 in 50 children, and the risk for a child born in the U.S. today is 1 in 25, if you extrapolate from those CDC figures. So that is a massive increase. And if those are due to a vaccine, or a proportion are due to a vaccine, then we've got a major, major problem. So this is an unintended reaction, and one cannot start to draw dividing lines between what is collateral damage and what is not without knowing the full facts. In other words, what is the absolute risk of the vaccine for this disorder? And they simply don't know. And without the science in place, without the numbers there, they simply can't make that call that this is an acceptable collateral damage. Neurodevelopmental disorders are rife in the Western world, and indeed elsewhere in the world. And autism, as I'm sure you realize, is the tip of the iceberg. We tend to see the most severe cases first in medicine. Those are the ones we recognize. But what of the rest of neurodevelopmental disorders in children are associated with the same kind of injury? We don't know. And until we know that, you simply cannot get into the debate about risk-benefit analysis. Now, the other part of this is that if these children are injured in the effort of public health to protect the health of the majority, then we have an absolute moral and professional obligation to acknowledge them and to care for them for the rest of their natural lives. Not to deny them, not to treat them as an inconvenient truth that you put in a corner or a home and forget about them and hope that no one will notice. That is totally unacceptable. And so if they are the necessary sacrifice, in the words of the public health official, for herd immunity or the greater good, then we have a real obligation to acknowledge that and protect them and look after them. And that absolutely has not happened.
Are you agreeable to the premise of vaccination, thinking of polio, measles, tetanus? Because I've heard both camps, and they argue back and forth. And one camp says, look, it's hygiene, it's sanitation, it's access to an environment that liberates health and wellness. And if you've got that kind of environment, you don't need to vaccinate. There are examples of people that get vaccinated and they still contract the disease. There are individuals that are innocent that suffer terribly. So is the principle of vaccination viable? Are you agreeable to it? And is this just an issue of type as opposed to degree?
The answer is, you know, in truth, I do not know. There was a time when I thought I knew, and I realize now that I don't know, because the more I look into it, the more questions are raised. When the story that we originally heard was of regression following measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. But then as we got further into it, we realized from disclosures in the United States that thimerosal, mercury preservatives, were present in vaccines. They'd never been tested for safety, but had been grandfathered in because they'd been around so long. Then we find out that there are adjuvants based on aluminum in the vaccines, which is, again, a powerful toxin that is there to promote the immune response but can have adverse effects on immunity and brain development. So the more I learn, the less certain I become, particularly when I review the safety studies and realize how lamentable they are. In principle, the principle of immunizing people against serious infectious disease with safe, effective vaccines is laudable. But in practice, how does one achieve that? And that is the problem. And as I say, the more I look into it, the more concerned I become that there have been so many corners that have been cut, so many safety concerns that have been overlooked. I'm just dealing with it now, for example. And what I found is that I was alleged to be the first person to have reported the MMR Association with Autism in that 1998 paper and caused mayhem. That's odd in the UK because MMR came out in 1989. And so why would it wait until 1995 for parents to report the problem? And then I find that through FOIA documents, in fact, the first reported case of autism following MMR was 1992. And it went to the UK's equivalent of the FDA. Well, what did they do with it? This is a sentinel case that they should have looked at and thought, this is odd. This is a new problem and we need to look at it. And then more cases arose. And by the time that I came along and started publishing on this, there had been 22 such reports. And in the US, there had been many such reports. So long before I got involved in this, other doctors had been reporting to the regulators that MMR vaccine was causing autism. Well, what did they do about it? Because the systems were set up, as they say in their own words, to be a sentinel for detection of these new problems. The fact is, they did nothing about it. And all I did was follow on and report the cases. This is the kind of thing that you find out as you go along and causes grave misgivings about the behavior of those in authority.
Having gone through everything you've gone through, why did you go into medicine in the first place? What was it that motivated you to go into the practice of medicine?
I think because my parents told me not to.
They told you not to.
My parents are doctors, my grandparents are doctors and great-grandparents and so on and so on and so forth. And my parents said, look, you've seen what a hellish life this is, no sleep and no weekends and all that. And don't do it. So I always wanted to be a doctor from very young. I'm fascinated by medicine and disease and how to treat it. And I know you have all these naive views of the world when you go into these things as knowing nothing, but it was intriguing. It was an opportunity to do something worthwhile, something important, something that my parents had done and my grandparents before them. And so I suppose it was continuing a tradition. I am the very first in the line to be struck off the medical register, though. I suppose that's a sort of... I should have heeded their warning, but there we are.
What kind of support do you have from your family in terms of, you know, what you've experienced?
Enormous. I mean, they lived in medicine for a long time to know how it operates, and they are very, very supportive because they know that it's real. It's undeniably real. They see through the thin veil of an extravagant, expensive, and failing public relations campaign waged by the British government and the pharmaceutical industry and others. They know that that is just a scam. It's a sideshow which is meant to detract from the real issue, and that's very sad. But no, they're not put off in the least.
So as an expert in this field and knowing what you've gone through and how you've put your mind and energy and focus into the research and listening to different people and talking to your colleagues, etc. Now, if you're not absolutely convinced about immunization, what about a parent? Like, for example, I have three children. They're adults. They all have their own children. We're grandparents. So my youngest granddaughter is 9 months. Now, my daughter, Ruby, we've discussed this, and she's decided not to immunize her child for anything, which we're favorable to, because after reviewing the data and the literature and doing the due diligence, which, as you know, most people don't do, I'm left with a sense of fear about moving forward in the direction of mainstream just for the sake of it, almost like I'm being pulled in. And, of course, she and people like her are subject to massive criticism. Another one of my relatives has two twins. They're not immunized. And the school program in Ontario is threatening to remove them from the school unless they get immunized. And then she's become aware that there's documents that she can facilitate and sign to remove that risk. But if you're not clear, and there's a huge side of the coin that says, yes, immunize, and if you don't, you're stupid, you're irresponsible, what is a parent today supposed to do?
It's a very, very good and a very difficult question. I don't have an answer other than to get informed. I think one thing that you'll find, Corey, is that, and this was highlighted in a paper the other day, is that in the United States, it is those people who read and the graduates, the professional people, those are the ones who are delaying vaccination or not getting vaccinated. What this tells us is that those who've taken a view based upon their understanding of the facts, there is real disquiet. It's easy to get compliance amongst people who, for example, do not have English as their first language or may be concerned about getting welfare benefits or their children in school or indeed have relatives who may not have visas and therefore they don't want to make a fuss at all. You can see how it's easy to coerce that population with a minimum of effort into getting fully vaccinated. But the intelligentsia, if that's a word I can use, is much more resistant. And that is a real problem for the authorities in this country because these are people who do read and do seek out the information. And my recommendation would be to say to the doctor, you insist on my child getting these vaccines. If you could just show me the literature, the scientific literature that's peer-reviewed upon which you base your opinion on safety, not just something that's handed down to you by the CDC or Dr. Paul Offit, but the actual facts of the matter. Show me that. Let's discuss it. And then if you can convince me, certainly I will go ahead and follow your advice. And that tends to be the end of the debate because doctors do not read. They do tend to take what they're hand-fed from the CDC and others. And that's not good enough. It's not good enough. It is not consistent with their obligations to provide informed consent to their patients. So the doctors need to get informed and the parents need to get informed. Study both sides of it. Go to the CDC's website, go to the National Vaccine Information Center's website, and then weigh up the pros and cons. But I can assure you, the more you read, the more perplexed you will become because you will realize that what you're being told and what your doctor's being told is not necessarily the truth.
Gotcha. Now, you're a father with four children. Have they been immunized? And can you tell us what their ages are and if there's been any changes or differences in the degree of immunization as a consequence of this experience for you? Or are they old enough so that they missed all of that?
No, they're my children range from 23 down to 16, and I have four of them, the first two received the MMR. We didn't have any data. I wasn't against it at all. And to my shame, I had not done the necessary research. It was just accepted that that was something that you did. And fortunately, they did not suffer any acute adverse events, albeit that one of them caught a disease later after the vaccine had failed, and that made the disease considerably more dangerous. Beyond that, the second two did not have the MMR and had a much lesser vaccine schedule. And until this issue is reconciled, I would not want them to have any more vaccines. So it is up to the authorities. It is up to the pharmaceutical industry. It's up to the government to do the studies that are necessary to restore public confidence in vaccines, because this isn't an issue that I created. This is an issue that clearly, as I said, pre-existed me. It was being reported to the authorities, and they did not take the appropriate actions. There is now a massive problem. 89% of American parents in a recent University of Michigan study put vaccine safety research as their number one medical research priority. So there is huge concern. Stop denying it. Stop obfuscating and get on and do the proper research to determine whether or not there is a problem.
There doesn't seem to be enough evidence from my point of view to actually support the circumcision of an infant child, a boy, a male. It's based more on a religious tradition, not on scientific evidence. Now, with that point made, from a moral position, say philosophically speaking, do parents have the right to actually mutilate their children or, in fact, inject them with things that are not viable or perhaps putting them at risk? Is that a right that we don't have from a constitutional, you know, sort of a sovereignty point of view where the infant has no ability to defend itself?
This is a huge issue and clearly crosses all kinds of cultural and moral arguments. But parents are responsible for their children. And this is a natural, this is part of the natural order, that until a child is of an age or an infant animal is of an age to protect itself and function independently, the parents have to take responsibility. And that also includes determining what kind of health care they receive. They should be, parents should be, to, in order to effect that role properly, as informed as they possibly can be. And if, and again, this is straying off the subject, but if it is part of the cultural, moral, and ethical norm of a society to circumcise, then that is the business of that society. We can have an opinion on whether we approve it or not from outside that society. It's very rare in the UK. It is not standard practice at all. But it's, I find one thing, that as I go through life, it's better not to be judgmental of other people. That can often lead to an aggravation of the situation, a worsening of the situation, when it is not something that I really have any right to express anything other than my own opinion on, and not tell people, other people, what they should be doing. And the same goes with vaccination. It's an issue for individual parents who are there to be responsible for their children, to protect their children, to determine whether it is safe in their opinion or not, based upon an assessment of all of the available evidence. That's a really tough call, but this is a huge decision, and it's a decision that may have an impact one way or another on the rest of their life.
Yes, that's some great insight, and I really appreciate your authenticity and honesty on these matters. It's what we need. I think it's what most people don't get enough of, and that's why it's very difficult for parents to make an objective decision. They don't know whether or not they're being taken advantage of. For example, do you think that immunization, for the most part, is just a huge, gigantic profit center, money grab for pharmaceutical companies? Is that the driving force behind their mandate?
The drive for the pharmaceutical companies, undoubtedly, yes. Their only interest is the bottom line. And that is just a function of the business they're in. When that becomes insidiously dangerous is when they start putting pressure on politicians, financial or other pressures on politicians, to endorse their products or force mandates onto populations merely in the interests of profit. One thing that really, really disturbs me is the recent law that passed in California, which allowed children under the age of consent to actually give express consent for a vaccine that their parents had said no, they shouldn't have. This comes in the context, for example, of the human papillomavirus vaccine. So if a child decides of their own volition that they want to have that vaccine, they can overrule their parents within the law. Now, that is so, that goes against everything with the last point that I just made. It is the demolition, if you like, the undercutting of the family structure in the United States. It is so insidious and so dangerous. And I can imagine a situation where the child goes to school and they're shown a video, and that video is made by the pharmaceutical company that makes the vaccine, and it shows disease and death and destruction and is horrifying and leaves that child terrified into having that vaccine. And then they say, and if you have the full course of this vaccine, well, we'll give you a free iPad. And that kind of process, that kind of marketing exercise, is the next thing down the pike as far as I can see. And that may be done entirely in contravention of the parents' will and advice to their children. And that is entirely wrong. And I can only imagine that it took some ferocious lobbying on the part of the pharmaceutical industry to get that kind of law passed.
Yes. Well, you know, you're living in the Wild West. I mean, it sounds pretty American to me. You know, I'm a Canadian. I've lived some of my life in the States and certainly traveled abroad. Now you're in the United States. What is the climate there like regarding vaccination or immunization, say, compared to back in England or, say, Canada? Is there more pressure to immunize? Is there more immunization in terms of variety? You read about the mixes and matches that are going on with how they combine the different viruses. It seems as if you're not against so much the single immunization as opposed to these mixes that they have, up to, say, 17 at one time or something. Can you comment on that?
Certainly. I mean, the reason for expressing concern about this is that when you put, for example, three live viruses in a mix, there is what's called interference. The mumps virus interferes with the measles interferes with the mumps, and it alters the immune response. And this was considered to be an irritation that meant they had to juggle with the amount of virus in the vaccine to get immunity, but they took no notice of the consequence for the potential problems for safety with that. Now, is that real? Yes, it is. And I'm dealing with this at the moment where people say, oh, there's absolutely no evidence that putting them together increases the risk of an adverse event. Yes, it does. Anne-Marie Plesner from Denmark reported on ataxia, that is unsteadiness, clumsiness, a neurological complication following MMR. They've never seen this with the single measles vaccine that had been administered for many, many years. So a novel complication appeared to arise. Meningitis arose from a vaccine strain of mumps that was used in Canada, in the UK, and Japan. And it was withdrawn because it was causing a huge excess of meningitis cases. Now, that vaccine strain as single mumps had been used in millions of doses in Japan for years without a single report, as far as I'm aware in the literature, of meningitis. But put it into MMR and suddenly it starts producing meningitis. Why? Is this real? And is it something about which we should be concerned? But they're not concerned. They're not at all. They're simply irritated that they've got to juggle with the amount of virus. So, yes, we now know that the rate of febrile convulsions is much greater if you give MMR plus the chickenpox vaccine at the same time in the same vaccine compared with if you give them separately. So you're adding complexity and you're adding risk every time you add something new into this complex and largely unknown biological mix. So I have major concerns about these what are called multivalent vaccines.
Right, and could you also comment on the two books that you've authored, Callous Disregard, Autisms and Vaccines, and The Truth Behind a Tragedy, and also Waging War on the Autistic Child? What can I expect to gain by reading these books?
Well, the first story, Callous Disregard, is really what happened to me in the UK. It's really unpicking what happened behind the scenes to me, how the system goes about destroying the career of a scientist who steps out of line. And it's all factual. It's been out there. It's highly critical of many people in the UK. Not one of them has come after me for defamation because they know that it's true. And it's all based upon the facts, and it really documents the disgraceful behavior of the system when it's confronted with protecting its own interests and people's personal reputations. The second book is the story of a family that I met on book tour in Arizona. They were a family with five children with autism whose children had been taken away from them and the parents accused of and indeed found guilty of Munchausen syndrome by proxy. Nothing could have been further from the truth. These children were sick and it was their parents' care and diligence that had got the children better. It was a disgraceful story of the behavior of child protective services, the hospital, various doctors and others. And again, the book's been out there for some time and no one appears to want to go to court about that one. It also is an extensive summary of the rationale behind the link between the bowel and the brain, what we eat, the bowel disease, food allergy, and behavior in children. So if anyone needs to read the science in a sort of lay form, in a potted summary, then that is the book to read. And the other thing to say, if I may, is that we recently started a non-profit to protect scientists and doctors acting in the interests of the patients, because this has become a real problem. There is an assault on these doctors like never before. If you want to get a doctor to testify on behalf of your child in vaccine court, you cannot get one. You cannot get one anymore if your child has autism, because people know, doctors, scientists know, it is the end of their career if they do that. So there are a handful of people still doing the science in the world because deliberately they have been intimidated into not doing it. They can't get support, grants, university positions because it goes against the pharmaceutical companies' interests and the government policies. And these scientists, above anyone else, need to be protected because they are prepared to put themselves on the line for your children. So that is a new charity called DAIR, D-A-I-R, Defending Academic Integrity and Research. And if anyone would like to make a donation, they should go to the Autism One website.
And speaking of websites, can you tell us about your websites and how we can get to you? Our students and members, I know, will take a lot of interest in our conversation today.
callous-disregard.com, that is callous-disregard.com. And people want to see what we're doing now. We decided to put the narratives of families on television to tell stories in a reality TV format of getting children better, that these children can be helped, taking children before treatment, during diagnosis, and then after treatment, and showing people that proper medical intervention can make a huge difference to the well-being of these children and consequently the lives of their families. And if you go to the autismmediachannel.com, one word, autismmediachannel.com, then those videos, much of that work is available there. So thank you very much for the opportunity to pass that on.
Yes, absolutely. Now, speaking of putting your behind on the line, you certainly have done that. In fact, in some circles, you've lost your reputation, your credibility, your practice. I don't believe you're practicing as a physician anymore in the United States, or are you even able to?
No, I never sought to get registered here, so I'm not.
The question I have for you is, was it worth it? Not just you, but I would assume your wife and your kids and your family have so-called suffered through and experienced. If you could go back in time, would you still submit that study? Would you still go through all of the pain and misery that you've gone through, or not?
Well, yes, it has been inconvenient, I confess. Would I do it again? Yes, I would, because the issue is so important. Science cannot just roll over in the face of the kind of assaults that I've received. People say to me, you should never have mentioned the vaccine in that original paper. Well, should we have censored science? Should we have censored the parent's story because it was inconvenient? If the child had suffered chickenpox following a kid's party and developed developmental aggression after that, would we have censored that from it? No, we wouldn't. So why would we censor the parent's report of a vaccine causing it? That would be wholly unacceptable. So I like to believe that I would have done it all over again. I think I'd have done something slightly differently. But in the main, no. We've been true to the parents and to the children and to the principles of science. It is up to history now, I believe, to reconcile what is the truth and what isn't and who the people believe. That's something that we'll just have to wait for.
Wow. Well, that's very strong, and we so much appreciate the work that you're doing to help us become more aware. Dr. Wakefield is a gastroenterologist, background as a physician from England and now living in the U.S. He's the author of a couple of books on this topic of immunization and vaccination, and we strongly recommend everyone out there to get to his sites and check out that information and become more aware on this very, very important topic. Dr. Wakefield, we thank you so much.
And thank you for having me on the show.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see ya changing heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.